good, healthy SaaS revenue, it's truly better than disability insurance.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey of self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today, Craig is sleeping away in the French Alps, and I am taking over. It's Dave Gone Wild in an episode here. Today, I have a guest who I am particularly excited about interviewing and chatting with here because he is actually a personal inspiration to me. Garrett, I believe you and I met, gosh, I don't know, 2, maybe 3 years ago at MicroConf, something like that.
I haven't been to MicroConf yet.
Oh, you haven't?
But it would not surprise me at one of the others.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Garrett and I have met at some solopreneur event somewhere, which I can't seem to remember and neither can Garrett, which is hilarious. So Garrett Diamond is a former founder of Sifter App and is now currently doing marketing at WildBit. Is that correct?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Okay. And the reason I specifically wanted to bring Garrett on the show here is that he has an amazing personal story that I think is wildly inspirational, certainly is inspirational to me, and I think it would be inspirational to a lot of other people. And so I've invited him on here today to share that and some stories about his journey. Welcome, Garrett.
Thanks.
Very glad to have you on here today. So let's jump in. Why don't you tell our audience here a little bit about your background and kind of what you've been doing since like 2008 when Sifter launched?
Yeah, so probably 2008 up until I guess March of last year or this year rather, sorry. Yeah, 2008 up until March, I was working on Sifter. Kind of the last few years, I've been dealing with a lot of foot issues after kind of surgery recovery went bad, got frostbite from an ice machine a few months back, ended up amputating. And kind of leading up to all that, I was like, you know what, I'm just exhausted. The whole process, all the appointments and physical therapy, and it's just such a huge distraction. And I was just kind of all over the place and not spending enough time with the family and kind of felt like I had too much catch up to do with Sifter and just didn't get all my attention for so long. And so, yeah, so I just decided, it's time to move on. Talked to the team at WildBit, and they said, yeah, come on over. Let's do this. And just everything kind of fell into place from there. So since I actually joined WildBit a little bit before we sold Sifter, but not much longer. And I've just been there a little over a year now and helping out with marketing, not traditional marketing per se, but kind of leaning more on my development background and having run an app and doing a lot more developer-oriented marketing. So kind of trying to get the team to do more open source stuff and actively release stuff that, you know, could be open source that we just never bothered to or things like that, and help write more things, you know, do more educational material, all of that.
Cool, cool. So you mentioned the surgery and your amputation here. This is the story of resilience that I really love to keep up with you on Twitter because of this particular story right here. So, I mean, can you tell us a little bit how you're doing personally since the surgery where you had, you know, your foot was amputated below the knee back in August of this year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So including the amputation, it was a total of 10 surgeries. The amputation being the most recent one. Before that was an ankle fusion. And then the other 8 all happened in a 3-month period, right when this all kind of went bad. As far as how things are going, it might be shocking to people, but really pretty darn good. It's one of those things where, sure, I wish it had never happened, but kind of going through it, and it gives you perspective, right? And
Oh yeah.
I feel like you know, a lot of friends and acquaintances have had kind of a rough time in the last few years, and talking to them and kind of thinking about everything, putting it in perspective, and it's just, I think we're all just kind of grateful at how things turned out, right? Because everything can always go a lot worse. But I feel like everything's back on track. The ankle fusion wasn't really something I was thrilled about trying. And so that was kind of the worst point. Tried to make the most of it. But so being somebody who just wants to be active and like go hiking and be outdoors and do that kind of stuff, it was just the ankle fusion. There was just too much pain. And so it was just hard when kind of almost every step was unpleasant. And I had researched amputation, talked to a lot of amputees in similar situations, and everybody is pretty universal. The only regret that any of the amputees had was that they didn't do it sooner. You know, it's easy to say that in hindsight, right? Because otherwise you amputate too soon, you can always second guess, oh, maybe I would have made it, my foot would have been fine. So, I mean, it's not a black and white regret, but in my case, you know, the same story, like I should have just done it sooner. And I feel like I was ready. I feel like a lot of friends and family were kind of like, oh, you're crazy. Let's amputate your foot. Like, but you can walk. And I was like, well, yeah, but it sucks.
yeah.
And, you know, I just really wanted to be active, and talking to people who had gone through with it, they were all more active than I was. One friend who was a bilateral amputee climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. And I was like, well, I could barely walk around the block without pain. And here he is climbing Kilimanjaro. And another person that I met and talked to, he had at one point, He both of his feet had problems. He was a veteran, and an IED exploded below his vehicle and kind of messed up his ankles. And so he ended up with one fusion and one amputation at one point. And he decided that the prosthesis was way better than his fusion and amputated the other leg as well.
Wow.
And just kind of story after story. And this kept, and I was like, all right, this is the right thing. Like, I got to move forward. And here I am just under 4 months, I don't know, like 3.5 months out. And hopefully I'll be able to kind of run and do things early next year. And, you know, it's just been good. Finally been able to kind of start to run and play with the kids again and just get around and not think about it. Like, when I stand up to walk now, I don't think about it usually. Every now and then it hurts, but it's getting better every day. So, you know, it's a crummy situation to be in, but all things considered, it's not that bad. You know, it's an inconvenience.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, what amazes me about you and listening to your story as you sort of tweet out your personal events that are going on, because I was following you on Twitter the whole time that you were leading up to the amputation, and I know that there was some uncertainty. Is this the right decision? And are you totally sure that this is going to be a better movement? And I remember something about the ankle fusion. You were definitely very hesitant about that as well. But what was amazing to me through all of that, and the reason that I think that you're very inspiring and your situation here is amazing, is that you never really lost a sense of optimism through all of that. Like, I think a lot of people could really sort of let that get them down, and that never really seemed like it was the case with you. I mean, was that just sort of the public persona versus the private agony that you were struggling through?
I mean, there were certainly bad days and kind of crummy moments, especially kind of in the hospital, in ICU. I was in ICU for a week at one point, and that was just terrible. I had no idea how terrible that would be. So, you know, it was definitely rough at times. And it was rough. But ultimately, like, there was always reason to kind of feel like, all right, well, if I just get through this and then do the next step and then get here, there was always kind of something to keep hoping for and moving towards. And I think when you have that, it's a lot easier. And so for me, like, all the hesitation with amputation, it was weird. Like, I was confident and I felt really good about it, but something like that, that's so permanent and irreversible, you know, and there's no command Z, you're kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe I'm not confident. You know, it's really easy to second guess yourself. And when all your, you know, not all, but when many of your friends and family haven't done the research that you have, and they certainly second guess it because they can't even fathom it. You know, you're surrounded by a lot of people who are like, are you sure? Like, this seems so extreme. And it's definitely hard. And there were definitely days where I was like, I don't even want to get out of bed. Like, I've had enough. I just need a break. But I would say in the grand scheme of things is a pretty accurate reflection overall that, you know, I was just ready to keep moving forward and make progress. And as long as things didn't regress. And really, that was really the bad days, was when things felt like they weren't moving forward, right? When I'd get scared that, like, what if it stalls? What if I'm stuck here? What if this is as good as it gets? That would scare me. But ultimately, the next day, things will be better. You just keep on trucking, and everything kind of just kept moving forward.
Amazing. So I was saying this to Garrett before the start of the show here, but I'll repeat it now. And that if I'm feeling where I'm just like not motivated to do something, or I'm really struggling to get through something, I keep thinking to myself, well, for God's sakes, if Garrett can start walking after having his foot amputated off, I think I can get through whatever piddly little thing I'm doing here. So, I mean, that's the personal inspiration that I've drawn from your situation here. Would you say that your experience as an entrepreneur made it easier for you to go through this really difficult experience? Or was it the other way around, that this difficult experience has now turned around and made you a better entrepreneur?
I wouldn't say that being an entrepreneur specifically helped. I would say that having a business with healthy recurring revenue certainly made it much easier. And I've written about this a little bit. That
right. I saw that article on
good, healthy SaaS revenue. It's truly better than disability insurance. Like, I not only did I continue making the same income without skipping a beat, but a couple of years into it, we even talked and decided to give me a raise. And there's just not a lot of situations where it'll play out like that. So that certainly helped. It really enabled me to focus on recovery and not stress too much about business. I mean, I was going to worry about the business no matter what. I think, you know, it's just kind of how it is. But it definitely helped me focus more on, you know, and having the flexibility to attend a point or to get to appointments and physical therapy and all the different things. Because when you're gathering second opinions and driving across town to meet with doctors and other doctors, and you just all of that stuff, get blood work done, and it just takes a toll and it just wreaks havoc on your schedule. And so being self-employed with healthy revenue definitely made all that a lot less stressful than it otherwise would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, about a year ago, like you said earlier, you sold Sifter to JD Graffam, an amazing entrepreneur, and I've had conversations with him. JD's a great guy. So can you tell me a little bit how life has changed since you've sold Sifter and moved over to WildBit? Do you have any regrets? Do you sort of miss your old SaaS days?
I wouldn't say I have regrets. There's certainly some nostalgia, I think, but all in all, it's one of those things where, like, amputation and that decision, they're kind of really big decisions that are very easy to second guess or regret. And so far, they've both gone really well and turned out to be everything I could have possibly wanted them to be when making the decision. And as far as change, I mean, definitely a lot has changed. I'm not on call anymore. I'm not answering support emails. I get to focus a little bit more. You know, when you're running a business, you've got to juggle everything. You're the one that's got to write the privacy policy and, you know, work with the lawyers on that and write code and answer support emails and do marketing and talk to the accountant. And so there's just, you're all over the place. And so it's really been nice to be able to slow down. Still all over the place because we have plenty of projects, but I'm at least able to focus on the same aspects of the, those projects and just really kind of put more thought into them and kind of, I mean, almost just have more fun because there's less burden, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. You get to focus on the stuff that is either your area that you've been given to really sort of drive or the stuff that you're really interested in versus everything's in your lap when you're the guy running the show. It doesn't matter whether you like it or not. You got to do it, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing I think that's made a difference that I probably some days I think take for granted is finally, like with Sifter, we had people helping part-time here and there, but there was nobody else in the trenches with me every day. And I think now being surrounded by a team of people that are just, you know, really fun to work with and do really great work, and that it makes it so much easier. It's like, all right, well, I don't have time for this. Like, crap, it's not going to get done. It's like, here, that's not going to happen. Like, it's going to get done. It's going to get done really well. And so there's a lot less of that. If I don't do it, it's not going to get done feeling, and a lot more like, oh, well, I don't have to do this because somebody else can do it better than me.
Right. Right. So are you working remote with WildBit, or are you actually going to the office with those guys?
No, I'm remote. I go to Philly a few times a year, probably ultimately like, you know, four times a year. All my surgeries and stuff have kind of screwed with that. But the long-term plan is that I'll visit up there pretty regularly. And then we do a team retreat for a week once a year where everybody on the team gets together in one place and we just work real hard during the day and play real hard at night.
Nice, nice. So is there anything about life as a solopreneur that you kind of miss now that we were working for WildBit?
I think if I was working for a large company or a more corporate type place, there might be. But, and I've told Chris and Natalie this, the founders, that even like if I ever get an itch to start a company, I'm like, this is pretty much the company I wanted to build and be a part of. So it's kind of nice to be in a situation where I don't feel like I'm working for this huge, massive company that doesn't really care about the team, because like at WildBit, it's just so family focused and people focused that there's not a lot to miss, right? Like there's that entrepreneurial itch. And like, I think for me, a lot of it is I've spent so much time documenting and thinking about everything I did wrong because I wrote the book that now I'm like, God, I could do so much better this time. Like if only, you know, I'd make so many fewer mistakes and do so much better and make better decisions. And, but then I'm like, I'm way too happy the way things are going. I have a hard time imagining that I won't want to do that again someday, but it's definitely not something that I want to do anytime soon.
So you don't necessarily see another product in your future, at least right now?
No, not in the next 4 or 5 years anyways. Maybe beyond that, but I can't even see another year out at this point. So who knows?
Yeah. So when you were getting ready to sell Sifter and you were having all this personal health issues with your foot here, how did those health issues come to bring you to the decision to be like, all right, I have to sell Sifter? Like what led up to that?
So all the issues with my foot weren't directly the cause of selling Sifter. Kind of like I said, that Sifter did so well taking care of me and my family through all of that, that it wasn't a direct relationship. It was more of just, I had been through so much and so many ups and downs and so many surgeries and so many recoveries and so many appointments that I felt I had this kind of, Sifter was more of a storm cloud for me because I felt like I had neglected it for so long that I could never catch up. And I was burnt out, not on Sifter, but just on the feeling of running my own business and trying to juggle everything and juggle my health. And I just felt like I was kind of being torn in too many different directions. We had our second daughter kind of in the middle of all of this. And so I just got to the point where it's like, well, with two kids, and it's like, I don't like kind of how I'm doing things. I'm trying to work and think about this too much. I couldn't, like, even we go out to dinner, you know, and it just would dominate my thoughts. And, you know, so it just stopped being a healthy thing for me to do. And I just decided it was the right thing for me to do to just get away from it. I think I probably would have tried a little earlier in all of the medical issues, but I had no idea there was a market for apps like Sifter. And so kind of that was the turning point when I realized, oh, wait, there actually could be somebody out there that would buy this business. And so in that case, you know, there's a way out and then I can move on and start exploring that. And sure enough, it all panned out.
Nice, nice. And you sold with Effie International with yep. Thomas and Ishmael's company there.
Yep.
And how was that experience for you?
Oh, it was great. I definitely went into it about as skeptical as I could possibly be. The first phone call with Thomas, everything he said, I was like, you know, I mean, I don't think I told him, but I was like, this is all exactly what I want to hear. Like, it's a little too good to be true. So I was even more skeptical after getting off the phone with him. But I had talked to Patrick McKenzie, who had just sold Bingo Card Creator, and he had said really good things about them. And he's pretty particular. So I felt a little more comfortable. I was like, well, if Patrick says they're good, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And so we went forward and went through everything. And they just did a really good job. You know, I almost feel like a paid shill for them now because they did so well, and they weren't in a hurry to, you know, just get their cut and move on. They like because we had a first deal and we walked away from it on closing day. So FE was a signature away from getting paid and literally put zero pressure on us to take the deal. And because I just kind of got uncomfortable. It's like, I'm not going to concede any more things. This is kind of pushing me over the edge. And they just stood by me and said, yeah, if you feel that way, then do that. And that meant more work for them. we ended up selling the company for less than that offer. And they just never even gave it a second thought. For them, it was just like, yeah, if that's the right thing for you to do, do that. Don't worry about, you know, there wasn't even a second where they said, just sell it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Just concede this. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, they are some very good guys. So I don't know. This is just actually getting released on the previous week's episode, which hasn't been released yet. So by the time folks hear this episode, they'll have heard the other episode where I announced that I actually bought an abandoned cart solution for Magento called Recapture.io. And right on. And I got it through FEI. But yeah. But it was one of those things, like, it took me almost 2 years to get it. So yeah. Poor David Newell was...
That specific one, or just looking, it took you 2 years of shopping?
2 years of shopping to find, okay, yeah, like, the right business where it was the right price, that I could qualify for the terms, and that it, you know, it met sort of all the right things in this list that I had. You know, it was a business, yep, I could grow. It was a business that I understood and that, you know, felt good to run and I'd be proud to talk about. And it was the right price, or it was a price that I could afford with an SBA loan because I was looking at financing that, yep, way. You know, it had lots of things to check off. And so there were several experiences where I had where I went through and I bid on something and I lost it. And I was like, oh, hell.
Yeah,
I gotta start over.
The SBA loans definitely complicate it.
Oh man, what a mess! Yeah, so I had to sort of change tactics about 3 months ago after not getting a lot of hits from the SBA side of things. But yeah, I mean, the FEI, never once did David say, "Just go ahead and take this," or "Yeah, don't worry about that. You can just buy this anyway. You'll be fine." They were always very much like, "Okay, great. We'll move on to the next one. You know, no worries." Yeah. And when I didn't get it, he'd be like, you know, I'm really sorry. This is what happened with that. And here's why it ended up getting lost. And it was because I usually got outbid. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, helped me to change my tactics in the future. Yeah. Yeah. I have nothing to say. Things. I guess you and I can be paid shills together. So.
Well, I say, and it's weird too, because I guess, well, in your case, you indirectly paid them. But like, I paid them. And here I am being a paid shill for them. I'm like, wait a minute, but you have to be paid anyways.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, they did well. They took care of us and really helped through all of that, especially for, you know, I didn't know anything about how to sell a business or any of that. My business partner was a little more wise than I was, but for the most part, I was clueless and they really made it easy.
Nice. Nice. Yes. Anybody out there looking to sell or buy a business, we always recommend FEI. That's just top-notch service and sales there for sure. So let's change gears a little bit and talk about your blog with Starting and Sustaining. So I have been following this for a while and love the articles as they come out there when you get new tweets on there. And then when I first found it, I was like, I think I got in about halfway through the series and it was something, mm-hmm, about payments. And then all of a sudden I went back through all the old ones there and I was like, oh, that's really good. I got to bookmark that. Oh, that's really good. I got to bookmark that. And I was just like, every one of those things, I'm like, I need to know this. I need to remember this because it's all, you know, really deep in the trenches, experience based. This is what we tried and this worked and this didn't. And you'd think this might have been a good idea, but it didn't work for us and that kind of stuff. So tell me a little bit about how this sort of came about here. Is this sort of like your personal diary of Sifter that came to life, or did something else motivate you to create that?
No, I mean, it was just, I think a lot, God, I can't even think back. I think it's just getting a lot of questions again and again from people at various places, conferences and the like, and via email. And I just started recognizing a lot of patterns and thought, I just need to put all this together in a book. And, it felt like something that I wanted to try and do anyways. And so I just decided, okay, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to put all this out there and, you know, see how it does, and did that. And that the book itself was like March of 2013. So it was a little before all my foot problems started. And then now after selling and going through all the medical stuff and then selling and due diligence really kind of made me look at the business through a magnifying glass and see a lot of things like, oh, wow, I really could have done that different. That would have made things a lot easier, not only selling, but also just running it day to day. And so through all of that, I thought, okay, I've got a lot more I can add to the book. I'm just going to write a second edition. Why not? Then once I started thinking about that, I was like, well, if I'm going to focus on a second edition, I'm going to change the first edition up enough and refresh a lot of those chapters. They all still stand pretty well, even 3 years later. But I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and release all the original chapters on Medium and kind of start something up there so that I have a place where I can share more of my experiences, interview people and talk about their stories and do that kind of thing. And so just decided, you know, I know I would do a lot better the second time around and make a lot fewer mistakes and be a lot happier. I figure if I can circle back and tell myself that, like, hopefully I can just share some of that experience and somebody else, it'll make it that much easier for them. So it's one of those things where it's just, it feels like the right thing to do. I enjoy it. It's kind of fun to write and gives me something to think about. And it gives me a more concrete goal than just, oh, I need to blog once a week or something like that. So, plus now that I'm not self-employed anymore, it gives me a side project that's kind of mine to really have, like, you know, cover the full stack of production and site development and do things. And, you know, it's just, it's fun, right? So,
yeah, no, that's great. And I've really been enjoying the republishing of that information out there because, like you said, there's tidbits in there that when you can read somebody else's experience and you're about to go through some of that stuff, because knowing that I was buying a SaaS, I was specifically collecting articles about, well, what are the things about payments that you're dealing with and what about this and what about that? And those were exact topics that you started covering and starting and sustaining in the republished articles. And I'm like, yes, that's what I need to know right there. So that was very helpful for me. I really appreciate that you did that.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. I mean, that's exactly kind of why it's out there. And so, you know, a lot of times when people email me and or mention that, and it's kind of, it's very encouraging that, okay, cool, this is helping people. This isn't just going out into space.
Yeah. Sometimes you wonder on the internet, right? You publish it and you're crickets start playing in the background.
Oh yeah.
You never know. All right. So looking back on 8 years, almost nine at this point, since you launched Sifter, based on your experience and having sold the business at this point, how would you say the landscape has really changed for single founders or small web businesses at this point? Would you say it's harder or easier today than it used to be?
In a lot of ways, it's the same. And in more ways, it's probably easier. But for every way that it's easier for you, it's easier for somebody else. And so there's just a lot of noise right now. And so, you know, I think it would be more difficult to launch now without some really distinct strength in the business, whatever that strength is, from really incredible interface design or, you know, really low costs or whatever it is that really helps you stand out, because there's just so many. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to launch a bug tracker today because of all the different apps in the whole spectrum. Because you're not just competing against other bug trackers, right? You're competing against to-do lists and things like Trello.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just so many, like, getting a foothold somewhere would be virtually impossible. I mean, not impossible, but it would certainly be more of an uphill battle just because there's so many options. So it's kind of one of those things where it's definitely doable. It's easier. You're going to spend less time, but because you can do it in 2 months, the next person can do it in 2 months as well. And that's just going to mean more of them out there. But the thing is, and this is it's no accident that the book title is Starting and Sustaining. So many of these businesses start and they realize how hard it is and they give up really, really easily. And I know even with Sifter back then, I saw plenty of bug trackers come out and talk about how, oh, well, we tried Lighthouse and Sifter and they all sucked or we didn't like them, so we built our own. And then a year later, they were shut down, out of business. They gave up. And you just can't throw something up and expect it to work. Like, you really have to invest in marketing and that kind of thing. And that's one thing that probably hasn't changed, is that I don't think the average solo founder is really investing that much time in marketing still. I think, you know, we're all product people and we think, oh, we're going to build a great product. People are going to love it. They're going to talk about it and it's going to be great. And we all think that, and we all think we're different, I think.
and in that, we're all the same.
Yeah. And, you know, so there's a lot of ways it's exactly the same, but there's a lot of ways that it's different. It's easier. It's harder. You know, it's just, you kind of have to prioritize different. And I think as long as you understand the landscape and understand that, for instance, launching a to-do list app isn't really going to, you know, it can be the best to-do list app in the world. But when you're competing with 1,000 to-do list apps, people just have too many options. And so they find the one that's right for them on the spectrum and they use that. And so it's just a really fragmented market, and getting a foothold that can at least sustain the business is just so incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see all of that. So at this point, if you were to try to start something new and different, how would you, like, what would you say would be your great strength that you would be able to leverage at this point that somebody else wouldn't necessarily have?
I mean, for the most part, part of me would say it's the experience that I'm documenting in the book, but then anybody that reads that book pretty much has all that same experience for the most part. I think for me, the biggest thing would just be knowing exactly what it's like and how long it takes, and knowing that it's going to take me 3 to 5 years to really get going, and going into it with that expectation and pacing myself, as opposed to, you know, it's just like a marathon. You can't just break out in a dead sprint in the first 100 meters and then not finish the race. And that's what I think too many people do. And that's certainly how I started Sifter originally. And then I kind of slowly realized, like, wow, this isn't sustainable. I've got to figure out a way to, you know, manage the business in a healthier way for me. And so, I mean, I think having that and really having a good understanding for that and appreciation for that would help, because I would be more focused on the long run than the short run. And I think, yeah, I mean, that's probably really where I would say, and it's not special, it's not unique. It's just that so many people expect that quick return that it's easy to get defeated when it doesn't happen. And it's very rare for it to happen that quickly.
Yeah, totally agree on that one. For WordPress, with other directory plugins, which I've been running now for almost 5 years, I've seen a number of competitors that came in and they're like, oh, we're going to make a competitor that's so much better than Business Directory and it's going to have all these features, and they release it, and then they suddenly don't realize that, oh, well, we have to support users and they expect us to talk to them within 24 hours. And, oh, man, that really distracts me from all my development. And, oh, crap, they're not paying me either. Why is this guy telling me over here that I need to have this feature done next week when I haven't even started on it yet? It's like, yeah, there's a lack of sustainability in that approach when they sort of look at competitors as, oh, I could replicate that in a weekend, right? That's the Hacker News mentality.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it too is just a lot of people, you know, if you're working a day job and you're dealing with bureaucracy and red tape and, you know, it sucks the life out of you and you feel like, oh, I hate this. I'm just going to go start my own company where I can do things my way and I can build whatever I want and code the right way and take the time to get it right and invest in quality instead of being so deadline driven. But then you start a company and you realize that a lot of your time, if you don't design the business correctly, a lot of your time is going to get consumed doing the things you don't enjoy doing, which is all the business stuff or the finances and legal, and, you know, or you're going to have to deal with fraud or hackers or, you know, whatever it is. And there's just as many downsides. And all of that time you thought you were going to instead, now, because you don't have to track your time for the man anymore, you're instead going to be able to write code. But you end up having to do a lot of that stuff and it takes time and it stops being fun. And then you realize, wow, this really is not enjoyable. I was having a lot more fun just, you know, hacking on side projects. And so I think a lot of it is just the wrong expectations going into it. And a lot of what I've tried to do in the book is help people kind of reset their expectations and have the right expectations and healthy expectations going into it. Because I think as intangible as that is, that's one of the critical things to help people kind of get through it all, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. So if folks wanted to connect with you online, what's the best way to do that?
GarrettDiamond.com. I'm on Twitter. It's Garrett Diamond. On Medium, the book and some, probably leaking some chapters and stuff on startingandsustaining.com. At get.startingandsustaining.com, they can get on the list for when the book's ready early next year. And those are the main spots.
Nice. We'll link those up in the show notes here. So if you have any other questions that we can pass along to Garrett, we'd be happy to do so. Give us an email at podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you have a chance, hit us up with a review in iTunes. We'd love to hear what you think of the show.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.